It's time to get ready for a very, very special presentation. And I want to make sure that we give Archbishop Laurie all the time that we can, because he has made time out of his very busy schedule to be with all of us. And that's the first thing I want to say. I know the committee is extremely, extremely grateful that Archbishop Laurie is with us. He has been visiting family in Louisville, Kentucky, and is on his way to another important meeting and has squeezed us in today, this morning, at a time, of course, when bishops are extremely busy, but this bishop in particular, this archbishop. So thank you so much for being here with all of us. Very briefly, just to let you know, in case you did not know, Archbishop Laurie is currently Archbishop of Baltimore. And he had previously served as the fourth bishop of Bridgeport, Connecticut, before succeeding Edward Egan in 2001. He was auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of Washington. So he comes to us today from Baltimore, and we are so glad to have him. I'm just going to let him come and take over the mic. Thank you so much.
Good morning, everyone. Very nice to be with you. I guess if this week has made you tired, I'm here to make you even more tired. I really want to express my gratitude for the opportunity to address you today and to express my warmest thanks for all of the ways in which you bear witness to the gospel of life and the role of the family in church and society. I also want to express appreciation for all of the ways you help married couples live their God-given vocation amid the challenges and pressures of our increasingly secular culture, and for your stout defense of the very institution of marriage and a family. And even though I did a little bit of homework for my address today, I would say that I am best prepared to come to be with you because I just spent a few days at my parents' home. My mom and dad were married 66 years ago. They were married in New Albany, Indiana, and in ages 93 and 92, they are still going strong, living on their own, driving the family Buick, and trying to keep the likes of me on track. In their married lives, they faced a lot of challenges. And in God's grace, those challenges have become blessings. Let me give you just one example. My older brother has special needs and lives in a group home not too far from where my parents live. Every Wednesday, my brother goes to my mom and dad's house for lunch. The menu is always the same: chili, caffeine-free Coke, that's very important, and a cake with a single candle on it, which my brother blows out with great gusto. On weekends, Mom and Dad visit Frankie's home, but no visit would be complete unless they brought a cake. In ways big and small, my mom and dad continue to teach me even now what it means to live a vocation with permanence and with self-sacrificing love. So you can see why my visit to Mom and Dad was my best preparation to be with you and to reflect with you on the truth and the beauty of the vocation of marriage and family, and on our duty to defend that vocation in season and out of season. The church in our country recently celebrated a second fortnight for freedom. During this year's fortnight, the Supreme Court issued two rulings, which will have great impact both on the future of marriage in the United States and on the future of religious freedom. Let's review what the court decided. In Hollingsworth versus Perry, commonly known as Proposition 8, the Supreme Court considered the California referendum in which voters decided in favor of authentic or natural marriage. The majority opinion, written by Chief Justice John Roberts, found that the proponents of Proposition 8 lacked standing to defend the law from constitutional challenge on appeal. As a result, the High Court vacated the decision of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, but did not decide the constitutionality of Proposition 8. Almost before the ink was dry, however, the state of California resumed so-called same-sex marriages. And although there are appeals underway, the likely result is that same-sex marriage will prevail in California. In United States versus Windsor, the court struck down Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, as that law applied to same-sex couples that are married under state law. DOMA Section 3 defines marriage as the union of one man and one woman for purposes of federal law only. The court found that it violated the equal protection principles of the Fifth Amendment for same-sex couples that are legally married under state law not to have the same benefits of legal marriage under federal law that all other married couples in that same state would enjoy. The court found this exclusion from federal benefits impermissible because it read DOMA as an expression of hostility toward gay people and as targeting them for special disfavor. More on this in a moment. On the plus side, the court did not find that the Constitution requires states to recognize so-called same-sex marriage. And so the Constitution does not require a nationwide redefinition of marriage. But this plus side is a narrow sliver indeed. On the whole, the court acted in a way that will further undermine marriage and in the process raise a host of religious liberty issues. It all but abandoned the obligation of government at every level to recognize the unique nature and role of marriage in society. In the disappointing majority opinion, penned by Justice Anthony Kennedy, the procreative dimension of marriage was given short shrift, and the bad effects of such massive social engineering on children was hardly noticed. What is perhaps most disturbing in the majority opinion is the view that those who uphold traditional marriage are guilty of discrimination and even bigotry. The majority opinion of the court adopted the opinion not only of those who support the redefinition of marriage, but also of those who try to intimidate and silence supporters of marriage by branding them as people who are against equality. In fact, Justice Antonin Scalia acknowledged as much when he wrote in the minority opinion these words. He said, "In the majority's telling, this story is black and white. hate your neighbor, or come along with us. The majority, he said, treats supporters of traditional marriage as, and I quote, unhinged members of a wild-eyed lynch mob. Such attacks on supporters of authentic marriage are unfair and false, and ignore the central question of marriage. And these same attacks bode ill for the future of marriage and the future of religious freedom. Dear friends, we are not against anyone. And please do not let anyone ever convince you otherwise. We are for marriage. We are for children. We are for families. And we are for preserving the religious liberty that God has given us and that our Constitution guarantees us as Americans who are also people of faith. Even as we are renewed in our resolve, however, we recognize that we are in the midst of a cultural sea change regarding marriage and maybe many other human relationships, a sea change that many younger Americans take for granted. While an increase, thank you so much. This is a dry talk, so they're bringing me water. Thank God for that. Wow. Gosh, I hope you have some too.